Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Southern Fried Podcast, a production of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Rex Nelson, Democrat Gazette senior editor, and a subject I love writing about because I grew up in the pine woods of South Arkansas. I love the smell of sawdust in the morning. Ray is Ray Dillon, who knows more about the southern timber industry than anybody I know, seriously. Former head of Deltic Timber, now Potlatch Deltic, a consultant to companies around the world, and most importantly, a longtime friend. And Ray, we were having a conversation recently, and I appreciate you for coming on because I have a feeling that so many of our listeners, so many Arkansans as a whole, just don't have a good grip on just how important the timber industry is to a state that is about 60% covered by forest.
That's correct.
They don't have an understanding of how big a part of our economy it is, do they?
That's right. Most of the time, if you don't drive through South Arkansas, you can't get a perception of just how many trees they are growing.
Absolutely. My wife, who I met when we were both living in Washington, D.C., of course, she's been here in Arkansas now since we got married, so for 34 years, but she'll still say to me, because she's from far south Texas. She's born in Kingsville, where the King Ranch is. So she's used to those wide open spaces, and we'll like drive to El Dorado through what I call the Pine Tunnel from Little Rock to El Dorado. And she'll say, these trees are choking me. And I said, oh, that's what makes Arkansas, Arkansas, especially South Arkansas. So again, thank you for coming on. I guess as we get started, what I would like you to do is talk a little bit. You're a native Mississippian. You're not a native Arkansan, but a little bit about your career and how you got involved with the timber industry.
I'll be glad to, Rex. Yes, I'm a native Mississippian, but I've spent more time in Arkansas than I spent in Mississippi.
Understood.
So young in life, I had a mentor who became my brother-in-law and helped me understand what chemical engineering was. Mm-hmm. And he worked for International Paper. So at a young age, I knew I was going to be a chemical engineer, and I knew I was going to work in the forest products and pulp and paper industry. So from high school, that led me to Mississippi State University, where I graduated in chemical engineering, and in 1977, went to work in Bogalusa, Louisiana, in the what at the time was a Crown Zellerbach paper mill. And then the pulp and paper career just took off, and then the stops went from, I was in Bogalusa about 10 years, then I came and ran the old Dirks mill in mm-hmm. Pine Bluff for about 10 years. Then my corporate assignment in Chicago was, or my wife would say our penalty was in Chicago.
Having to survive some Chicago winters?
And for 10 years.
10, wow.
And then the company was sold. And then that's how I became CEO of Deltic Timber Corporation. One important thing that happened along the way is while I was in Chicago, I went back and got my MBA at the University of Chicago with a focus in economics and finance. And candidly, that was very strategic in preparing me for the CEO role at Deltic. Deltic being a small forest products company, small cap name, in El Dorado, Arkansas, and I'm talking to investors candidly throughout the world, but mm-hmm. mainly in New York, Boston, Baltimore, Chicago, and we were small and didn't have any, I'll call it, analyst coverage. So the CFO and myself were the marketers for the company and trying to help investors understand the value in the company. But so the career came from pulp and paper, then to forest products at Deltic and growing trees, sawmilling, real estate development.
With Chenal, exactly.
Chenal Valley, and then the Fayetteville gas play, Fayetteville Shale gas play. And so for an old farm boy, it was the best job in the world. Mm-hmm. I'm dealing with trees, I'm dealing with manufacturing, I'm dealing with real estate, I'm dealing with Fayetteville Shale gas revenues. And I'm proud to say that we were very successful at Deltic. The market value of the company was $200 million when I went there, and we sold it for $1 billion.
I have to tell you an anecdote that you will appreciate. Way back in 1991, I was editor of Arkansas Business, and not only was I editing the publication, but I still liked to write, so I would write occasional cover stories myself. And one of the cover stories I did is go down and spend a whole day in El Dorado with that great Arkansan Charles Murphy. And Mr. Murphy, those who know Arkansas history, picture him. He had that bow tie on, you know, looking the part. And I'll never forget the Chenal neighborhood, and I lived in West Little Rock at the time, was just starting to take off, of course, in about 1991. And Mr. Murphy Ray says to me at one point, he said, you know, he said, if I had any idea there were so many rich doctors in Little Rock wanting to build big houses, I'd have stopped trying to grow pine trees on that old sorry rocky land years ago and use it for residential development rather than growing pines.
Well, I mean, the story, Chenal Valley is the best example of higher and better use timberland conversion that I've ever seen in my career.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to say I would tell investors that I'm standing on the shoulders of Charles Murphy, because Deltic wouldn't have existed, it wouldn't have been public, without his leadership at Murphy Oil.
Exactly.
And then the next thing I would tell investors is that growing a real estate development is like growing a forest. Because if you go back, when Chenal Parkway was built from Shackleford to Cantrell, okay, candidly, only Mr. Murphy could have done that,
mm-hmm.
okay, with his prestige, power, and, quote, friends. And so he put the four-lane highway in, not two lanes.
That's right.
Chenal Parkway from one end to the other, built Founders Golf Course, and we sold the first lots there in the, or, you know, in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
And so now in 2020, 2021, 2022, it's just exploding out there.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's become the banking corridor with all the community banks.
I was going to say, when I talk about it, I know we're getting off subject here, but our listeners, I know a lot of them tend to be interested in the overall Central Arkansas economy. And I point out, when I talk about how we are becoming a real regional banking center in Central Arkansas now, I do use that example. I said, just go to the corner of Chenal and Rawling right now and look. You'll see that big Cadence, formerly Bancorp South regional headquarters. You'll see the First Community Bank regional headquarters. You'll see where Simmons bought the Bank OZK and have gone there. Go down the road a little bit, Arvest, a new building going up right now. It is really amazing.
It's very amazing. And you know, when I would talk to investors about that, okay, yes, it was timberland. It was the old Sturgis Lumber Company timberland. Mm-hmm. Mr. Murphy bought it because it was timberland and a sawmilling, okay? And so then one day, how Chenal Valley came about is that there were several, quote, developers continuing to try to say, would you sell us this?
Mm-hmm.
And he finally decided, well, I can do that.
I'll just develop it myself.
Yeah. Develop it myself, and that's what happened. But it's an integral part of the Central Arkansas community, and it's special.
That leads me back to our overall subject, because you mentioned Sturgis Lumber. As you know, I'm an Arkadelphia native, so I'm very familiar with that Sturgis name. Dick Sturgis was one of my dad's quail hunting partners, so prominent in that part of the state. And we were mentioning how important it is to the economy of Arkansas. And yet, Ray, you know, roughly, I know the figure that is used. You can get much more exact than I can, but we find ourselves in a place now in the state where we're growing timber at about twice the rate as we are harvesting it, and we need markets for that timber that we're growing. Talk a little bit about that problem and how we get new capital investment into using that timber that we're already growing across Arkansas.
Okay, so let me back up one step and just tell you that there's not a better place in the United States to grow timberland than timber than South Arkansas. It's got great soil, got high site indexes, which means the fertility of the soil, and candidly, we grow tall trees and big trees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So where that what that leads to is long boards and wide boards, and they sell for more than the 2x4s do.
Gotcha.
So the timberland, your manufacturing base, the dirt. Yeah, I mean, it's candidly agricultural land. I could think about it as agricultural land that's very fertile, and it grows great trees throughout South Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great place. Now, then from that, you know, there's been a lot of land conversion take place from pasture land to planting it in trees because of the CRP program.
Right.
It may be family land that you've got a absentee landowner now, maybe living in Nevada or Iowa or somewhere. They plant trees on it because they're not going to be able to manage cattle.
Exactly. I have written about it, as you know, Ray. I mentioned my dad was a bird hunter growing up in those areas of Clark and Dallas counties, bird hunting where 50 years ago, I'm dating myself now, but I was a kid hunting with my dad, hunting those small cotton fields, those small bean fields. All of those are in pine now. That goes to what you're saying. And so, I drive those roads now looking at them, and it's all pine.
So we're growing more trees on the acres. Then genetically, we've improved the pine seedling to the point that its growth rates are higher than what they were years ago with genetic improvements, okay? And then you've got, you know, we manage, I would call it threats. We manage wildfire better than what we used to. We manage southern pine beetle infestation better than what we used to. So where that leads is we've got a higher survival rate today. So not only do we have more acres planted, we're saving more trees due to technology today. So that's what leads to the abundance of the product. And then, you know, from a market standpoint, yes, okay, we need more markets because we're growing more wood than we have markets for. And the, you know, from a pine log standpoint, we've got a great sawmill community, but we can supply many more sawmills with the trees we have.
Mm-hmm.
Our real problem is small wood, pulpwood. Okay, the Georgia Pacific adjustments at Crossett had a big impact,
right?
As far as demand is concerned, and then we're just growing more. Is the main problem,
mm-hmm.
but you know, I can't emphasize how important it is the paper mills are to the forest products industry, because that's where all that pulpwood's going, and that's where all the chips are going out of the sawmills. So, Pine Bluff,
Camden, Moralton, Ashdown,
Ashdown, mm-hmm. and that's why I work so hard to try to get Sun Paper here.
I wanted to talk about that a little bit. I mentioned I was an Arkadelphia native, of course, Gum Springs to be exact, but just outside of Arkadelphia, a super site put together there. I know you actually put in several years in working on that project, which would have been, at the time, the largest capital investment in the state's history. One thing we can't control, and we had you and a lot of the best minds in Arkansas working on this, is we can't control international politics, can we? And U.S.-China relations just went south.
Just went south, and you know, it was a rewarding experience for me to be able to work with Sun Paper. And by the way, Sun Paper is made up of good people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's not a Sun Paper issue. It's a geopolitical issue.
That's
it's
right.
A politics issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they still want a paper mill here.
Yeah.
And we were going to build the largest linerboard facility in the United States there.
Wow.
But, and that's how much pulpwood we have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, you know, I never give up, but, you know, there's just not interest in a capital investment of that size. I mean, we're talking billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm. With, okay, a B. Yeah.
Yeah. And the return on that, I mean, it's somewhat speculative. And from a pulp and paper standpoint, if you're a public pulp and paper company, the minute you announce, I'll call it an expansion or a capital investment of that size, your analysts are going to candidly decapitate you because of your allocation of capital, and you're going to drive linerboard prices down, and you're going to destroy the market,
mm-hmm.
is what happens. So that's why we can't generate any interest in the United States, but I've tried South America, I've tried Eastern Europe, everywhere where you can find someone that's making linerboard to look at this site, but it's the capital hurdle and the return rate that's that always, I'll call it, stops the progress on the project.
Yeah, absolutely. If there's, and this doesn't help the use of that pulpwood that we need to use that you mentioned, but you know, as I write about the whole economy and of South Arkansas a lot, if there's any silver lining, it's the fact, and this is another subject for another day, but obviously we've got the coming lithium boom coming in Southwest Arkansas, and that super site sitting there would seem like to me a great location for an electronic vehicle battery manufacturing plant at some point if we don't get a forest products plant there.
Great location, got interstate access, you got great UP rail access.
You'll be close to that lithium at that point.
And you can get it anywhere in the world from there. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were going to make liner board and ship most of the tons to China.
Mm-hmm.
And we had figured out logistically how to do that competitively.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And but that site will be used for something major in this state.
All right.
I just wished it would be something in pulp and paper.
Absolutely. I was going to say, getting back to the Arkansas forest products industry, how do we find new users of those trees we're growing? How do we attract that capital to Arkansas?
Well, I mean, it all starts with housing. I mean, the end market for most wood products is housing. So if we talk about where mortgage rates are today, you know, housing starts are quote, below the curve because of mortgage rates. People aren't relocating because they've got a mortgage at 2 or 3%, and their new mortgage would be 8 to 10%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know exactly what it would be, but so people aren't moving out of their homes. So, therefore, you've got to build new, and most first-time homeowners can't afford to build a new home. And then the high, what they see as high interest rates scares them to death. So that leads them into apartments. And, you know, that's just the way that cycle works right now. But even with that, from a wood product standpoint, the industry has done a good job of managing supply and demand to where today we have, I would call it, reasonable lumber prices, so that our sawmills are profitable and are healthy, which are key. But I want to go back. Sawmills aren't profitable and healthy unless there's paper mills taking the bark and the chips and the sawdust from the paper mill. So it's, you know, it's very much a closed loop, okay? And it all has to work together. But that's why the South Arkansas wood basket is competitive, is because all of those elements are in place. Yes, we need new uses for that fiber. And as you know, I'm involved with the John Ed Anthony Innovation and Materials Center at Fayetteville.
Absolutely, which I've written about and will be doing more about. And in fact, just last week as we taped this show, I was with Dean McKeith from Fayetteville down at Garvin Woodlands Garden, where the Whipple family from Arkadel, if you're close family friends of my family, are going to have a forest center there also.
Yeah, there's pictures are showing up from that event. I wasn't able to attend, but I cannot emphasize how important it is that you mentioned Dean Peter McKeith. He's a wood guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's a thinker. He's a researcher. He's a thought provoker, okay? And because of his background from Finland and his love of wood, and
right,
especially with that tied to the Fay Jones School of Architecture, I mean,
who used natural wood and stone in all of his work, Fay Jones, yeah.
And so it's a natural fit for Peter, candidly, to be a strong industry partner and for the industry to support Peter. And I was fortunate enough to make a trip to Finland with Peter, it's probably been a year and a half ago now, to look at what the Innovation Center in Finland looks like, which is really what we're trying to create our Innovation Center, but it'll have many of the same parts and pieces, and it's going to be phenomenal.
So I know you obviously could get real technical being an expert, but in layman's terms, for me and our listeners, explain a little bit about, because it could be the great future of the timber industry, about mass timber, what it is, and why you can now build skyscrapers out of wood.
Well, I mean, CLT is an innovative product, okay, and it's a product that allows wood to compete with both steel and concrete. Okay, and going back...
CLT being cross-laminated timber? Right?
That's correct, okay. But that's where the education side of this with architects becomes so important. We're not trying to teach them to design only with wood. We're making sure they know how to design with wood and where wood would be the best fit. And now with the invention of cross-laminated timber, and basically what you're doing is you're taking boards, gluing them together, and they become stronger. And we can make walls, okay, that are modular, can be set in place, so there's a construction advantage at times. And then you can build heights. And in fact, there's environmental qualities of the building and with the air flows with the wood itself. And so it is a developing industry, and the use of the product is gaining attraction. It's kind of like medium density fiberboard. When Deltic invested in the medium density fiberboard business,
it was a new thing.
It was a new thing then, but today it is what most of the molding in this country is made out of.
Interesting.
What most of the call it desktops are made out of, and the key thing is that it loves to be stained. Mm. It loves to be painted.
Yeah.
Okay. Rather than stained. So
gotcha.
if you're going to paint it, the molding
that's what
in
you
your home.
Use.
Yes, and it's easily routed where you can put the design on it that you prefer.
Gotcha.
And so it took a while for medium-density fiberboard to, quote, make its way into the residential market, and it'll take some time for cross-laminated timber to get into the market in a way that it should.
What a great example. We mentioned Dean McKeith. We mentioned the UA Northwest Arkansas. What a great example, though, that Walmart is using so much timber in that massive new corporate campus it's currently building at a cost of over $1 billion in Bentonville right now.
That is correct. There'll be a lot of cross-laminated timber used in the construction of that facility, and I haven't seen the plans, but I'm told there'll be a lot of other wood used in the building.
Great.
And there's the Peter McKeith influence in that, I'm sure.
Exactly. I drove just a couple of weeks ago. I drove around that construction site. I don't know if you've been up there lately, Ray.
It's huge.
It's like I told somebody the best analogy I can make. It's like you were creating a major new university from scratch and building a university campus. That's what it struck me as.
It's a campus.
All at once, yeah.
That
huge
is correct.
Campus. Going to be massive landscaping there. It's going to be unlike anything this part of the country has really ever seen.
Right.
But again, sending a good message about the timber industry and the Arkansas timber industry.
Yeah. And the timber we grow here. We grow, because of the soil, we grow great trees here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They're performance-based as far as the lumber, the product that's coming out of them. And that's why Arkansas has never had any trouble marketing its lumber to our surrounding states.
So explain to me, and I'm asking you as the expert here, when a while back lumber prices soared, why did timber prices not respond to that? Why did timber prices not go up?
It's the old supply and demand, okay? Lumber prices went up because we were in the middle of a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of sawmills shut down because didn't know where we were going with the workforce and work rules and, candidly, exposure and liability. So, and, candidly, expecting there to be a tremendous recession associated with the pandemic. And when there's a recession, one of the first things going to go is housing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we had just come out of the 2007-08 recession.
Right.
So sawmills were, quote, getting ahead.
Gotcha.
Okay. And so from a demand standpoint, lumber demand exploded. because all of a sudden people wanted to live in houses rather than live in apartments.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to live outside of town rather than in town. Okay. So the residential market exploded.
And during the pandemic, those that already had houses were doing renovation projects and adding home offices on to them as they went home, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, repair and remodel, they call it. And so what happened was lumber prices, you know, kept up with supply and demand of lumber, and realize lumber is a different market than pine trees. Okay. The reason the pine tree market didn't explode is because there's so many pine trees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, gotcha. There was the mills could get the logs they needed at the price they were willing to pay.
Right. Gotcha.
And they could do that because there's so many trees in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's strictly a, you know, all of these are
demand, right.
All of these are micro markets.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's supply and demand. And it's where can I haul 10 loads today?
Yeah. Yeah. Is gotcha. What it, yeah, I had a major timberland owner tell me during all of that, he said, I'm so tired of people looking at lumber prices and say, you must be getting rich. And he said, I'm not getting rich at all. My prices hadn't gone up any at that time.
They barely moved, if any.
Yeah.
And it's strictly how many trees are growing and how many trees are being marketed.
Yeah.
You know,
Our 30 minutes are going real fast, Ray. I'm going to have to get you back because I want to continue having this conversation. But as we start to wrap up, give me a sense, and let's be Arkansas-specific here, of where you see the forest products industry in this state 5 years from now, 10 years from now.
Okay, and I'll talk forest products and not pulp and paper, but from a forest products standpoint, timberland and sawmills.
Right. Right.
Okay.
And then we'll get into pulp and paper too.
We've got great industry partners here: PotlatchDeltic, Weyerhaeuser, and Green Bay Packaging. Those mm-hmm. are the three largest landowners in the state, and they do. Every one of them does a great job with managing their land, environmentally sound, and sustainably. Okay. So we've got great industry partners. So the question is, you know, that land is in industrial hands today,
mm-hmm.
and that land will stay in industrial hands. Now, I don't know what mergers may take place in the future or whether some entity comes in and buys these entities. I don't know that, but that it won't go back to private hands.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it'll more likely be in a industrial.
Understood.
Okay, that's that land. Now, the private landowner. Okay, you mentioned Ross Whipple. You mentioned John Ed Anthony.
We're both friends of mine. We've got some great ones in Arkansas.
So the question is, what happens to that family land? They're two of the largest family landowners in the state today. The question is, over time, as the patriarchs pass away,
mm-hmm.
what happens to that land over the next 5, 10, 20, 30 years? Okay, if history is an indicator of the future, sooner or later, that land, or most of that land, will be in industrial hands.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not guaranteeing. It's just
you're saying that's been the history of our state.
The history.
Yeah.
Okay. And for many reasons, but we'll still have great timberland, and it'll be managed well. Anybody that acquires it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pulp and paper. I mean, and you have explained to me privately, you know, the environmental regulations, the capital that we need, why we haven't had a paper mill built in this country in decades. Are we going to see one built anytime soon?
My goal was to make sure that we did, and I have not given up on that. But my honest answer is it's hard to tell today, and here's why. Here are the paper grades that are still growing. Okay, container board, which is made into corrugated boxes. And that grade in the paper market is still growing. And
so we're ordering from Amazon, those boxes shipped to our homes.
It's all of those boxes.
E-commerce, yeah.
It's e-commerce, and it's all those boxes on your front porch, and it's all those empty boxes in your garage.
Yeah, and that's not going anywhere anytime soon.
Okay, so but that market continues to grow.
Mm-hmm.
That's container board. The other market that continues to grow is tissue, okay? So you know what we do with tissue, and that
exactly.
ain't going to stop anytime.
Not at all.
Okay. But the tissue market continues to be healthy and continues to grow.
Meanwhile, as you said at a quote-unquote newspaper newsprint in the toilet, to use the terms as we were talking tissue, because we still call ourselves a newspaper here. We still publish one every day, but we're mainly a digital product now. So there's a huge change
for the
market.
But there are those of us that find that daily paper and still read it.
Me too.
If I'm traveling,
I'll
read it digitally. But no, newsprint has been declining for years, okay, and it continues to decline. Now, if we go back to the box market, what's happening with the box market is that even though demand is increasing because of the Amazons of the world and e-commerce, but if you read the Wall Street Journal, you'll see that at least twice a month there's a picture of Anthony Pratt announcing a recycle mill.
Full-page ads. I see those ads in the journal. Yeah,
full-page.
Yeah.
Announcing a recycle mill and a corrugated box plant, you know, in sight. So what's happened is that as containerboard has grown, the demand for it has grown, it has been made up with converting white paper machines to containerboard and the new recycle mills that Anthony Pratt's been building. So getting back to the virgin mill that we're talking about is when someone is going to say there's enough of this and quite frankly take the risk to build it and hope that the economic return is justifiable.
Yeah. Ray, we're out of time. Thank you so much. Let's do it again soon because there's a lot more I want to talk about.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
Ray Dillon, our guest today as we talk about the timber industry in Arkansas, its importance to our state and our state's economy. Thanks so much. You've been listening to the Southern Fried Podcast, a production of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette.